It's rough out there, you know, in the world. Some of us turn to writing for solace and inspiration. Text that helps us take in the dark and find the light. So if you are someone who wraps themselves in words to warm your heart, or maybe just looking for a little help getting through the day, week, year, join us as we talk to people about the pieces of writing they use to bolster their souls and remember their way. The good bones that remind us we can make this place beautiful. Hello, and welcome to Finding Good Bones, a literary podcast where we talk with people about their favorite pieces of writing that help them take in the dark and look for the light. I am one of your hosts, Kate, and this is...
I'm your other host, Amy.
And this is Finding Good Bones. Hello, yeah. And welcome. Amy, what are you reading?
Well, I am still on my reread of Shauna Maguire's October Day series. I'm now on the third one, Artificial Night, and It's great, almost done. And I will reiterate for people, just so you know me, I think this is probably my eighth or ninth read through of this series. And maybe more than that, because when a new book comes out, I go back and read the previous book so I can catch up. So who knows how many times I've read each of these books, especially the earliest ones. So Artificial Night, that's where I am. Book three in the Shauna Maguire October Day series.
Nice.
And what are you reading?
I am reading Stress-Free Potty Training.
And is it?
No. It's all very stressful. I'm also like not near. So this is the second in potty training books that I have been reading. I have one more that I got. I don't remember what that one's called. The first one was like potty training for a busy parent. But like I read it and I was like, this is not for a busy parent. This is for a parent who has like many days to sit around with their unclothed toddler, chase them around to make sure they're not peeing on things. Like, no, this is not that. And so I haven't really gotten too far in this other potty training, which is not to say like we are still having her go to the potty. I might be ruining it all. I might be doing this terribly. I don't know. Our rails are off. Yeah.
So the other one was almost like puppy training, like the puppy's running around and they start to pee and you just grab them and put them somewhere. Is that the toddler idea?
I think the idea is that they don't have pants on or a diaper. And then like, yeah, you the parent look for their physical cues of needing to go to the bathroom, and then when it's time, you take them so that they can learn the feeling. And people swear by it.
Okay,
I'm not doing that because I don't want to. It sounds like a lot of work in a way that I don't want to do it. But you know, I'm not saying I'm. Right now, I don't feel like I'm doing anything other than, like, at specific times, I'm like, we're going, like, oh, you just got up. We're going to the bathroom. Here's a reward. It's mini M&Ms. But she's also very oppositional some days, and she's like, no, potty. And I'm like, you gotta go. I mean, whether or not, if you don't go in it, then you don't get a treat. And then if you yell at me the whole time, you're going to be in trouble after. And you still have to go potty. So make your choice. Toddler.
I hope
we don't have any like child psychology experts listening to this that are like, you're ruining her. Maybe I am, but I don't know. We'll find out after I actually read more of this book. No, I've really just gotten through kind of the first part that's setting up that this is a thing that has to happen, and also don't have what I do like about it. Their whole like stress-free thing is basically like, don't put any expectations for yourself on how this is going to go. Like, this is not like your ability to potty train your child is not representative of your worth as a human. And then I was like, okay, I already knew that, but thank you. Thank you for saying that. So that's what I'm reading and doing. I'm doing it also. Like, it's taking up a lot of my life and already took up a lot of this podcast. So moving on to our wonderful guest who I am so excited to introduce you to. Ladislao Loera. who also I affectionately refer to as Lottie because I know him and he gave me permission. But I can't say his full name if I need to, and I did. But Lottie is an artist, improviser, award-winning storyteller, and animal lover. He has taken part in storytelling events for Testify, which I'm allowed to say that you're the artistic director of Testify, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, he has participated in many ways, including, like, being in charge of it. Also, I'm from Driftwood, Drinking with the Saints, and The Moth, where he won with a story about sympathetic nausea and what it teaches us about love and connection. It's an amazing story. And I will also say that he won a Grand Slam, Grand Champion. He's a Moth Grand Champion, and it's a, just an incredibly moving story that I love. He's not telling it today, though. Sorry, friends. Sorry, dear listeners. Lottie is also an award-winning public speaker with Toastmasters International. He is a native Texas who currently resides in Austin with his husband, Steve, and he's a fan of the world but does not want to explore it. His idea of traveling the globe is going to a new HEB, which in all fairness, like, HEB is a microcosm in it in and of itself, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it is a world. We love HEB. Here at Finding Good Bones, we love HEB. If you're ever looking for him, he's most likely at home. Or perhaps a new HEB. Hi, Lottie, welcome.
Hi. It's so nice to be here.
Oh, it's so nice to have you here. HEB is the best.
HEB is wonderful. You know, every once in a while, Steve and I will talk. If we move someplace, where would we go? I say it has to be with a driving distance of an HEB, or I'm not going.
I agree completely. I lived for a while without an HEB when I moved to New York in my 20s. And I remember the first time I went to, like, one of their grocery stores and I was like, this is missing a lot. So, yeah, HEB. So, Lottie, what did you bring us today?
I brought us, the book is called Why Fish Don't Exist. And the author is Lulu Miller. And here we go. And that's when it hit me, that it was not a lie to say that Anna matters, or that Mary matters, or that, hold on to your seat, you matter, reader. It wasn't a lie to say so, but a more accurate way of seeing nature. It was the dandelion principle. To some people, a dandelion might look like a weed, but to others, that same plant can be so much more. To an herbalist, it's a medicine, a way of detoxifying the liver and clearing the skin and strengthening the eyes. To a painter, it's a pigment. To a hippie, a crown. A child, a wish. To a butterfly, it's sustenance. To a bee, a mating bed. To an ant, one point in a vast olfactory atlas. And so it must be with humans, with us. From the perspective of the stars or infinity or some eugenic dream of perfection, sure, one human life might not seem to matter. It might be a speck on a speck on a speck, soon gone. But that was just one of infinite perspectives. From the perspective of an apartment in Lynchburg, Virginia, that very same human could be so much more. A stand-in mother, a source of laughter, a way of surviving one's darkest years. This was what Darwin was trying so hard to get his readers to see, that there is never just one way of ranking nature's organisms. To get stuck on a single hierarchy is to miss the bigger picture, the messy truth of nature, the whole machinery of life. The work of good science is to try to peer beyond the convenient lines we draw over nature, to peer beyond intuition where something wilder lives, to know that in every organism at which you gaze, there is complexity that you will never comprehend. I love this so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, that's everything.
Oh my God.
So can you tell us a little bit about this book that this is from?
Why Fish Don't Eat. What's interesting to me is I am a horror person through and through. I'll read sci-fi from time to time, but I just read horror all the time.
Love it.
This book was recommended to me by Steve, who had it recommended to him by his friend named Kurt, and it was recommended to him by his neighbor, who just read it.
Right.
And so I figured, okay, let's go ahead and try this. And it turned out to be such a beautiful surprise that I didn't miss my horror, and I usually do. If something doesn't grab me within the first two or three pages, I'll move to something else. But this was not like that. It was such a different way of looking at life, mm-hmm. because what the story is that she is at a bad place in her life, and she needs something to help inspire her, and she latches on to this person. That did all these wonderful things in his life after he had gone through some trauma. And she uses him.
Wait, real quick, a person that she knows, or?
No, a historical person.
Oh, okay. She latches on to like a biography.
A biography of this person.
Okay.
And it helps her. It spurs her on. But as she learns more about him, she learns that he was really problematic in quite a few things. Then he did some amazing work, but then he did some other things that were really, really kind of crappy things to do.
And then
how do you balance this when this person has spurred you on and mm-hmm. you find out, but they were also kind of creepy.
But what a thing, right? I think many of us, if not most of us, are grappling with that. You know, the killing your darlings, never meet your hero.
Or the fact that for any one of us, there are some people out there who have some unkind things to say about us as well.
Oh, for ourselves.
Yes, we are not everyone's hero. But it's interesting because while we can forgive ourselves, it's interesting when you have to look at this through someone else's eyes and see what they had to do to forgive someone.
Yeah.
And then it opens up the world to how much do we forgive?
Well, do we always forgive ourselves for not, you know?
Yes, yes.
I might sometimes have an easier time forgiving a figure for being human than myself, for being vulnerable at a time that I didn't want it, or for misstepping, right? But I think that's important, too, because we are also, the more we uncover, like, and more, the more we talk about privilege and the more that we understand the really big injustices in this world, right? Like, many people are stepping in it.
What I find interesting is that everyone steps in it. And for some reason, some people are easier to forgive than others.
Yeah.
And sometimes it has nothing to do with what they've done. It's mm-hmm. the way they are represented. It's the way they put themselves out into the world. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we don't want to forgive someone because we just don't like them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I'm struggling.
I
can't picture anybody not just immediately loving you, Lottie. It's because I did. And I'm not one that's typically instantly loving people, right? I take time and work, and I have and so therefore I also know that I am somebody who's not always easily forgiven, perhaps because I'm not always very liked. But it's true, right? And I felt it too. Going to words, actually, when I use the word should, especially in the frame of like, I shouldn't have to do this, or I shouldn't be in this position, or they shouldn't have done that. I always know that I am not ready to move on. Like, nothing else matters that I want to be angry right now for whatever mm-hmm. reason, right? Not necessarily because I don't like them, but because I'm here. And if I'm still using the word should, because like should is for a world that we don't exist in. Right?
I like that. I'm going to try and use that myself because I do that. I do that too. It should not be this way.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. I'm right. I shouldn't have to, but like, that's for a perfect world that we're not in.
But right now that's where you are.
But it's just an awareness thing, right? Like if I'm able to move past the word should, then I know that like, actually, okay, I'm over this. And if I'm still just like stuck on it and stuck in it, then I just know, right? Like, I'm like, okay, I'm still mad. I get to still be mad right now.
Go ahead.
So yeah. So
allow yourself that.
Exactly. Now, how familiar with you or were you with Lulu Miller before?
Not at all.
Not at all. Okay.
I did not know who she was. I did not know anything about her. But I fell in love with her during this book. And then I started looking up things about her. Said, oh, she did this.
How do you feel about her now that you're learning
I
more
know
about her?
What happened?
I still like her.
She's wonderful.
Because she's for what she did is she, I think it's a matter of the way some of us grow up that you learn very quickly, to read other people's. I'm really good with people's faces and stuff. Like I can tell what's getting ready to happen. And I think that's because my parents were crazy. So I learned how to read crazy pretty quickly. but when you learn that, and you see crazy getting ready to pop up, you discount a lot of things that are going to come up next. And she kind of had me looking at that. Like maybe it's okay to be aware of crazy, but you don't necessarily have to check out. Because there could still be something of value there. Yeah. And there is. There always will be. But can you make room for it? And it's not something that I would have allowed myself to do because I've seen crazy up close. And my first thought is, let's close the door.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But this has changed that. It kind of made me like, okay, let's close the door a little bit. But we don't have to close it all the way. Because there might
don't
still
have to
be
lock
something.
It. Yeah, we can leave a little door jam in there.
You don't need the deadbolt.
Can you think
everything.
Of a? Yeah, can you think of like an instance recently? I guess maybe without naming names or something like that, but where you've put this into practice.
I'm currently trying to put that into practice with my family. With my family,
okay,
and they are because they're still the way they are. But I try to look at them through this different lens of the things that they have done well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you can focus on the things that they did well, mm-hmm. then maybe it softens the things that they didn't do well. And I'm not good with it yet.
No.
But who I have, it's also changed the way I look at things like Josh Whedon, because Buffy.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, Josh.
Me,
Josh. Why? How did I not know that you were a Buffy?
Oh my God. It is one of my favorite shows. There's just something beautiful in every episode of that show. But he's a horrible person.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he sucks. Actually, he's probably just kind of mediocre bad with attention on it. Like, everybody's like, and he said he was a feminist. And I'm like, y'all, for the 90s, he was.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's a good person, right? But
no,
like he
but you're
sucks.
Right.
But like he's just kind of medium bad. And for the time period, actually it was good. Like we can look back on it now and be like, oh, so problematic. Well, but at the time it was like
and that is hard to do because you're right. For the time he was good, but for now he's horrible.
Well, okay. Okay.
For the time
his depictions of women and relationships were good. His treatment of his young actors is not good then or now, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But actually, I'm applying this to that, too.
Really?
So, directors being really hard on their actors is a long-standing tradition.
Not hard on them, maybe hard on them, but not... I mean,
I should say abusive, like directors being abusive to their, I mean, in some, there are some people that are trained.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it as an excuse, but like as somebody who has been acting for a very long time in a number of productions and went to school for it and saw people being taught and saw people learning,
mm-hmm.
it didn't start with Joss Whedon. And it actually, I think it's perhaps good at some point, maybe not on this podcast, but to address the bigger systemic issue of mm-hmm. of what how we instruct people to use their power. Because I think that actually a lot of what Joss Whedon was doing was living up to his heroes, right?
Mm-hmm.
The auteurs and the people who had come before him. And this is what it looks like to be in that position of authority. This is how power is used and this is how authority is used.
Yeah.
None of that has to do with Lulu Miller's book. And I will say, I know Lulu
Miller,
actually
it
not
does,
personally.
Because,
oh, does it?
Yes,
oh, awesome.
Because that's what happens. She sees this person and he is brilliant at what he does.
Yeah. What does he do?
He's a biologist. He's a scientist. He follows Darwin. He learns
that
about evolution.
Sense.
He learns all this stuff. And the whole theory, as you find out later, one of the things he does is he classifies fish. He became the person that classified thousands and thousands of different fish. And some of them have his name, but he's the one that did it. Yeah. He's the one that actually went out to the Amazon, went into South America, went to Africa. He went to all these places and found these fish and gave them names, brought them into existence. They exist because of he's the one who gave them their characteristics and everything. And he also happens to be a person who believes in eugenics.
I was going to say, yeah.
You're like, yeah. Oh.
This sounds like a very racist. Like
it was, because one of the things that she says she realizes later is, well, he didn't. He was there, but he hired the locals. He hired the little South American boys to go into the water. And these are the same people that he would not classify as really an upper tier person later.
Oh my gosh.
So he didn't do the work. He had the work done for him.
Right. And
applied
the same hierarchy of fish as he did to humanity.
Yes.
Right? Or I guess, yeah, applied to humanity, this idea of classification that's also with fish.
And what's interesting to me is that I didn't learn, and I thought I knew things, but I did not know this. That the eugenics Bible that Hitler decided was wonderful was actually they were using it at Stanford.
Oh, yeah.
Because they believed it, and I did not know this. I always thought this was them, but no, it was us. And then you look through history, and it's been us for a long time.
I mean,
made me sad.
But that's what also we're struggling with, because we do work in this, and I think that's actually touching on a bit of the piece that you brought, the snippet, where we work on a very false dichotomy of us versus them, and actually it's just all us. And we use that in the positive sense, right? Like, it's all us, and we're all people, and we're all worthy. But also, we are us. So the people who are doing such terrible things in the world, they are also us.
They are also us.
Yeah, and that's hard. And yeah, how do we find that worthiness that they're not willing to attach to them?
That people can give grace to themselves, but not to other people. But then I look at myself and I do the same thing. I'm like, I'm sorry, you said this phrase, and that phrase is beyond the pale for me, and you're no longer a person that I'm going to listen to.
Yeah.
Or you're no longer a person. I'm so sorry.
So that's what made me love this book. I think I've read, in the last year, I've read it three times. I just finished it for the third time.
Because
it every time I get to this part where is the end, where she's talking about the dandelion principle, where she says, really, everything is of use.
Yeah.
If we are unaware of the uses just because it's not useful to us, but everything is of use. That's the only reason it's here, is because it's of use somewhere. And I just thought that was a beautiful way of looking at the world that I have to be reminded of. So when I need to be reminded of again, I'll read the book again, because every once in a while I go, this person, why are they here?
Right. And it is for something that you don't know.
Yes, it is for absolutely something that I can't understand, because it's not for me.
To get stuck on a single hierarchy is to miss the bigger picture, the messy truth of nature, the whole machinery of life. I think that probably, in a way, sticks with me the most, because suddenly it goes from a hierarchy to like a matrix, right? The way that I'm looking at the world, or at least trying to. Mm-hmm. And, well, you know,
It's amazing, because even with you and your child, the fact of the matter is that the way we're put together, one DNA slice in the wrong place or in a different place, you've got an entirely different individual.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that there are as many of us walking around as there are that seem to be relatively able to exist in the world and to make sense of it.
But that's it, right? Like, I think that's our challenge, because that is that first step. Like, a hierarchy is a first step in making sense of it. But a lot of times we stop right there, right? And so how then do we begin to add into the hierarchy that we've made the hierarchies that other people are making as well? And I think there is such a, within society, and to help establish us versus them, which is a very easy, or, oh gosh, what's the, there's a very famous, I'm going to put it in the show notes. There's a very famous, I think it's an anthropologist who talks about the dichotomy, like, the first there's the self, and then there's us versus them, and then there is, like, community. Or I'm totally misquoting it, but do y'all know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
This thing that I'm referencing terribly, can anybody reference it better?
Yes. Isn't it like how children start learning?
Yeah. But also, if we think about, like, people as a society, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about it. I'm paraphrasing it actually from The Good Place. I've heard about it elsewhere, but it's like, you've never moved past yourself with a toddler. Like, there's an interesting thing actually where she doesn't really see herself as, she doesn't see me as, she's starting to, but for the first like 2 years of her life, she really didn't see me as a different person than her. Like, she knew me as mama, but she doesn't see me as separate the way that she sees, like, her dad as separate. And actually, apparently, that's why a lot of times dada is the first word that babies say, because they're the first person that they're recognizing
as
outside
other.
Of themselves, because they see their mothers as part of themselves. God. Yeah. And back to the DNA thing, it's also just really interesting, but microcosms, but, like, my DNA has changed. I have somebody else's DNA. I learned this because I got really terrible eczema. And they're basically like after I gave birth there, I got really bad eczema. And they were like, oh, yeah, it's because you've got you are hosting somebody. You've been hosting somebody else's DNA.
What?
And your body is recognizing that. And it's apparently mad about it.
So, I've never heard of this.
Well, that's, I had terrifying. Neither. I didn't realize that was a thing that could happen, but it did. But I also love going back to the ideas, because what this also evokes for me are not just those hierarchies in nature, but also I love the tension between being really big and being really little. And I think this touches on that too. And like from different perspectives, and going back to like a mother, being a cat mother, but everybody here has had animals, right? And mm-hmm. it has always struck me that, like, yeah, I am an insignificant speck here for a second, but also one way, right? Mm-hmm. But if we go the other way, like, I am 90% of your whole world. Mm-hmm. That's the cat, not the child. Who cares about her? I'm thinking about Sally Syrup. And that was when we were living by ourselves. But this idea of big and small, right? And that I am, anytime I'm feeling like not very important, right? Or just I'm not the most existential person, but my husband certainly is. Sorry, Alex.
So do you think that changes for your cat? Because I think with my dog, uh-huh. I was, like you said, 90% of her world. And when she met Steve, I still think I was 90% of her world. But her world was just bigger that she could give him 10% of it. She was like, okay, you're here too. I was still the main thing for her. So I think for them, the world just, like with your cat, now you've got your husband and you've got your child. I'm not sure that you're still not 90% of the world.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
She just decided the universe is bigger.
She has not. She has, she's like, well, they're here. But that doesn't mean that they're mine, right? So we're talking about, like, not sharing a space necessarily, but, like, importance, right?
Ah, I get it. I get it. Yeah.
And so, like, she's aware, right? But it's still, you know, it's still me for a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I think about that, and not just that, but then, you know, I try to extend that to, like, oh, there have been some times that we've had some, like, gnats, some fruit flies, mm-hmm. and, like, we are a home that tries not to murder bugs too much, but like sometimes you just got to kill them. And there was one time at my old apartment where there were many and there was a massacre. And then I did have a moment where I was like, oh God, like who am I, right? To murder generations of these fruit flies. Because that's, you know, again, extending like the idea of big and small, like someday something real big might come and wipe us out, or we build something real big and we wipe ourselves out, right? Like, and yes. So I what also was really evoked for me in this was just that it's all true, right? Like I am huge and I am also nothing. A speck. Yeah. And
at the same time,
it's so hard.
But it's such a beautiful way of looking, because if you can look at yourself and see yourself that way, and you're able just for a second, because it's hard to hold it, to give that to someone else.
Yeah.
That's really a wonderful gift, to look at them and be able to say, you know, you're just as important in someone else's world. Yeah. And you're not my favorite, but you're this big thing somewhere else.
But you have to not be mad at them anymore.
That's the hard part.
You have to move through the anger. Yes.
No, I don't think I have to.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're better than... No, that's not the right word, but congratulations.
I have a hard time with that, too. I have a hard time giving up anger and things like that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know if it's... Because I feel... I'm doing the should. I feel like I should not be angry to these things. And I think, you know, you need to give this up. And then I'm like, well, no, maybe I don't. And that's why I can't yet. Maybe there'll come a time when I can. So I decided what I could do is say, I could go ahead and tell myself, it's okay. I can forgive myself for not being not angry.
Yeah. Well,
and sometimes that's the best I could do.
I think that it's important, you know, to move. So I don't think you have to give up your anger, right?
Oh, okay.
I think it's just moving through it. And it doesn't take it necessarily away or erase it or anything like that, right?
So what is that like on the other side? If you move through it, where do you end up? What is it?
For me, because I'm sure it's different for everybody else.
For you, then?
For me, it's basically just kind of like, oh, I was really mad about that. And it changed how I see this person and how I allow them in my life. But I'm not mad at them anymore. I don't feel it, right? Mm-hmm. I got to do a lot of this work like with my dad, who was bipolar. So I very much identify. And it's that hard. It's holding two opposites, right? In your hand or in your heart or whatever, where like this person deeply hurt me, or I was incredibly angry with this person, but I also acknowledge that they're a person. And a way that I do that, actually, I love that you use the word grace. It's one of my favorite words earlier, like the giving grace. And anytime I am in a real snit about things, if I want to move past it, again, don't always want to move past it. but one thing that I do is I think about the grace that has been extended to me and how I have been given such grace in my life. And I want more of that in the world. And the best way I can do that is by trying to extend it to others. I say trying.
I think that that's a beautiful way of saying that. I kind of like that. I like that. And I can see that when I look at it, I see it with animals, with dogs and cats, because that's how I relate to everything. And I know that when I went on vacation or I went to do things and I was gone for a week, my cats were so freaking mad at me.
Oh yeah.
They would sit and yell, and they were annoyed, and they wanted to be in my lap, but at the same time they wanted me to know that they did not want to be there.
I love an angry cat loaf where they're like right next to you, but they're not facing the other way, but like right butted up against you, or they're like, I'm still mad.
Yes. Yeah.
So the angry
that's what,
cat.
That's kind of what that's yeah. it, because that's what they're doing. They're doing the same thing. I'm really mad at you. I'm really glad you're here. But man, why did you do this to me? So it's making me look at it that way.
And that hard thing of like flawed people still have value.
Yes.
Right. And or, you know, my dad was bipolar and he went through a lot, and the person he, you know, on the other side of a lot of trauma, right? The person that he eventually became was not the same person that I'd grown up with and was different. And that was good in some ways and really hard in others. And it took a long time for me to sit with the version of him that he was then. I would say now, but he's passed. But it took a lot for me to just one day realize, oh, this is just who he is now. And there's merit in that. It doesn't line up with the memory of the best parts of him that I had when I was growing up, right? But this is the person he is now, flawed, but also wonderful in different ways, right? And it's okay that this is who he is, even though that's not necessarily who I want him to be. And that took decades.
That's beautiful.
Well, yeah.
See, because what happened with me through this book was looking at my parents. My parents, they had no grace for me being a gay man.
Right. And that's different, right? My dad modeled a lot of grace for me. I will say that. Mm-hmm. Like, he was a whole crazy person and he caused a lot of harm, but he was a model of grace for me. And so part mm-hmm. of what I could do was say, ooh, I should extend him some of the grace that was extended to me. You are not required to do that for your parents who have not done it for you.
They did not, and I think they will have problems with this for the rest of their lives. But yeah. The very interesting thing when I was reading this book, it was things occur to you. And I remember one of the first early memories I have with my parents is sitting down on their couch watching. I have no idea what show it was, but The Fifth Dimension were on, and they were singing Up, Up and Away in My Beautiful Balloon. And I remember they stopped. They turned it down to look at me and said, you know, the world should be nice to all people, even people like this who don't look like us. We should find a way to be nice. And they said it, and they didn't live it.
Right.
But something happened, and I have no idea why some stories stick and other stories did not. Mm-hmm. But that story stuck with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I gave up Santa Claus. I gave up the Tooth Fairy. All this other stuff I believed. I knew it was a lie. But this story became true to the point to where even when they told me I was wrong, I was like, nope. I believe the first story you told me where everyone should be treated equally. Everyone should be treated fairly. Everyone should be nice to everybody. I believe that story. So I'm going to hold on to that. So while I'm not necessarily always, I have learned to thank them for mm-hmm. giving me that story.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. that story means the world to me. It's mm-hmm. it's what made it me able to look at them in the eye and say, well, no, you're wrong. Earlier, you was right. Whoever you are now is wrong.
It's not just that you're wrong in a wider sense. Like, you are not, you specifically taught me this lesson. And I wonder if that's a little bit different, because that's not as much a story as that is a lesson, right? Like, they were mm-hmm. instructing you in who they think you should be.
Yes.
And should. but they are not able to be that in themselves, right?
No.
And again, that's that interesting, like, big and little thing, right? Where they're, I think they didn't realize how big they were and how, you know? And
I don't think that they expected that to be a lesson that I would hold.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually use against them.
No, it's for them, Lottie.
Well,
it's not against them.
It's not
against them. You're actually, what you're wanting, or what it sounds like you're wanting, is for them to be the people that they have made you.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. They made you, you know, parts of them have helped make you a good person. They should.
Yeah. Well, that's what I got from this book. I was able to look at them and see, okay, they're not this, mm-hmm. but they certainly were part of this.
Yeah.
They certainly gave me a seed that bloomed beyond what they realized was going to happen.
So we get back to those hierarchies, right?
Yes, yes.
They didn't realize, like, the dandelion.
Yeah.
Or it's that dandelion, right? Like, yeah. They were looking at it in one way, and you...
It grew.
Yeah, yeah.
It
and
grew.
Yeah, and it... I love it.
I do, too. And so that's what this book was able... It was able to give this to me and remind me of this wonderful... I called it a story, but I think you're right. It's more of a lesson. It reminded me of this lesson from them.
Yeah.
That they planted and had no idea what was going to happen with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that they'd be held to their own standards.
Standards. You can't do this. Yeah, you said I could. You said the whole world should. So
Yeah. Done. I took it to heart. I think that's really wonderful. I think, Amy, you already ordered this book, right?
Yes.
I think it's so wonderful watching her go through these stages where she's heartbroken and then she's healed and then mm-hmm. In the middle of her healing she's heartbroken again because of the healing.
Yeah.
But she keeps going and it's just wonderful.
It is the grief, right, of discovering, you know, and I think it can be in our personal lives or it can be more of a not exactly parasocial, but with like our heroes, right? But the grief in discovering that the person that you thought you knew is not in fact that person and is in fact like human and flawed.
And that happens for ourselves too.
Oh yeah.
When we look at ourselves and can actually look ourselves in the mirror and go, I could have done this better. I should
and
have done this so much.
And that's actually what I struggle to forgive myself the most on. I will continually counter. Like, I think we can give ourselves grace. And then I think also it can be really hard to give ourselves grace mm-hmm. when we aren't necessarily the people that, or at least for me, when I don't live up to who I thought of myself as.
Who we want to be.
Oh, I can't forgive my, or not even who I want to be, who I thought I was. Oh. Before this happened, right? Before I did this thing or said this thing, and the people that are able to give me grace when I am not the person that I thought I was or that mm-hmm. I want to be, whatever combination, like that is who I try and remember when I struggle to give grace to others. 'Cause I just love that word. I think it's the perfect word for it, right? 'Cause it's not forgiveness. It's not saying it's okay. Or, you know, it's not agreement or anything like that. It's just the acknowledgement that we're all humans.
Yes. Which is all, because when I use it, I was raised Catholic too. So it has religious connotations, but I don't use it that way at all.
Yeah.
Because to me, it has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
It's just honoring the humanity in another person, including the unpleasant parts.
Yeah. The totality of humanity, which is...
It's too much.
It's too much.
The totality is too much.
It's too much. It is. Well, that's a podcast. I need to find another way to say that.
Like it. I love the way you put that. I also love that you're always the one who's like, that's it. I'm just sitting here letting it happen.
Well, no, it just, we have like seamlessly covered and beautifully covered everything that we had to talk to you about.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, didn't even have to look at my questions.
No, absolutely. What I'm thinking is I'm always sitting here being like, probably we're done. And then you say it and then it's beautiful. And I think that's a podcast is exactly the right way to say it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that grace. And thank you so much, Lottie. You are
a light.
I love every opportunity I get to work with you. And again, I'm really like,
if
somebody doesn't like you, I want to talk to them.
No grace for them.
I will be like, no, you like him. I will give you somebody to dislike who is me. You will not like me and you will like him by the time we're done.
So that's very kind of you.
It is, yeah. again, thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. This was wonderful. It was a wonderful conversation.
We'd love to work with you again anytime. We do need to thank our first Patreon subscriber, who is Drew Allen.
Yes, Drew.
I don't know if he actually listens to our podcast, but he does. He's such a good person. I could see him being like, well, I'm not going to listen to it, but I'm going to give him $2 a month, which is they're all different
shout
levels.
Out you, Drew. Beautiful.
Yeah, thank you for being our first patron and helping make this podcast happen. If you, dear listener, are interested in helping make this podcast happen, there are many links to our Patreon all over social media and on our website, findinggoodbones.com. Also at findinggoodbones.com, you can, if you want to, request a personalized selection for yourself. So we're basically, you fill out a little information in a form or email findinggoodbones@gmail.com with a little bit of information about you and what you're into or what you're going through. And we will pick out a piece of text, a piece of writing for you that we think you might enjoy. That's how we hope to someday close this podcast, but still hasn't happened. So not today. We really just should plant somebody and make them do that. Like 7 people should in a perfect world. We wouldn't need to. Shouldn't have to do that. Anyway, thank you so much, dear listeners. Thank you so much, Lottie. Always a joy. Dear listener, I wish you could see Lottie's joyful and wonderful face right now.
His smile.
It's the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
And thank you, Amy. And I guess thank you, me. And join us next week as we continue to go finding good bones.